Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is Farah Hassan bringing you a May Initiative podcast. The topic for today's discussion is COVID-19 pandemic and its effect, psychosocial impact on families and individuals. We will be focusing and highlighting the coping strategies that people can use at home against fear, stress, and anxiety, which is building up, which is flaring up these days. So joining me today to discuss this very vital topic is a dear friend, Dr. Uzma Iqbal. She is a renowned oncologist and she's an extremely compassionate individual, and she's involved in multiple organizations facilitating growth and well-being of our community. She is in our community. I'm going to welcome Dr. Uzma. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Uzma. How are you?
Assalamu alaikum, Farah. I'm fine, alhamdulillah. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Just, you know, I think I am, I'll agree that I'm one of those, I'll count myself among those who are undergoing a little stress and overwhelming, you know, a lot of stuff is going home. We are home and juggling with work and with families and all of that. So trying to find the middle ground, you know, you can say that.
I agree with you. You know, I was just thinking that we have always wished for some more time with family and some, you know, me time, alone time with family. And now that when we are faced with some time with family, it's been a little bit of a struggle. It's not coming easy to everyone.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a very strange, I thought so about the same thing. I was thinking that, you know what, we would always think of having some downtime. But I don't know the dynamics. We are maybe not used to it. And or maybe it's a social distancing aspect that we can't do a lot of outside activities. We can't go out and we are just basically stuck at home. Some are working from home. Some are just going out for work like yourself and my husband. And so it's a lot of, you can say, new change. It's a change in the lifestyle that we are not used to, probably. So we have to do it, start all over again. The family dynamics, we are not familiar with it. That's what I feel.
Agreed. And another thing which I am thinking is that maybe it is that we are asked to stay home, and we are not thinking that it's coming out of our own personal choice. Because sometimes when we are sort of forced to do things, we just viscerally react to it in a very different way. Maybe that whole thing comes out like, you know,
it's not your free choice.
And, correct,
you
know, correct.
There is an element of danger also looming of the pandemic. So it's like multiple things happening that I think are not putting everybody at ease with each other, even with themselves. So
and that, you know, brings us to maybe a good time to just talk a little bit about what this whole pandemic is about. And because we are not seeing the enemy, it's invisible. And in many cities, like in New York City, it's devastating the city. So people have a better grip on the severity of it as compared to, for example, in Houston. Yes, we are seeing it in the hospitals, but we are not seeing it in the magnitude of New York. So people are still having a little hard time grappling. Is that really that serious? Is it real? I mean, do I really need to do what I'm being asked to do? So keeping that, one of the things I've been asked many times is like, what is this? What is this infection? And how come so many people get flu every year and we're not panicking? So a couple of things about, this is a novel virus, meaning that this has, our human bodies have not seen this virus before. So we have no immunity against it. Unlike the other common colds and the flu, although it's the same family. The other important thing is that this is very contagious, way more contagious, and it grows exponentially. Like one can give it to, let's say, two can give it to four to 16. So it grows exponentially. So those are the reasons why people are saying, CDC is saying, local governments and health facilities are saying, keep the distance, because the air that we breathe, or somebody coughs, there are droplets in that area, or if we touch our hands are contaminated, we touch our mouth, touch something which then, you know, can be used by somebody else. So it spreads like that. So that's the reason for social distancing and hand washing. And now that they are saying masking also, like if you really go out, you can wear a mask, and you don't really need to wear, they're saying surgical masks. It could be a cloth mask also.
Yeah. So do you think that the cloth mask is would be helpful? Because previously they were saying it won't protect you.
Right. And you know, that just brings us to the other basic deep concept of it. Sometimes when the information that is delivered is not unified, it loses trust of people.
Right.
And then people are left to believe, like, should I believe this now? I mean, before we were told that no mask is needed. Now we are told, you know, cloth mask is needed. So in conditions like these, the best thing is to comply with the advice that is being given, because because it's a novel virus. And we are all learning. Even the scientific community is learning as we go along.
Right. Every day there is something new that comes up. So new guidelines also. So I think that it's going with the flow is the norm with this virus, probably.
Correct.
Because we don't have any previous data to support anything
right now.
It's just as we are going, moving forward.
Correct.
So another question I really wanted to ask was that, you know, regarding the social distancing, which a lot of my clients are asking, whose husbands or wives or children are in the healthcare system, that are they really supposed to, when they come home, should take really good precaution to go and take a shower and be clean and all the preventive measures before they interact with the family? And how much interaction should they have? Like, what are the limits of that physical interaction, sitting with the family, having same meals, sitting together? Even intimacy factors come in. So would you like to just give me something on this aspect?
Sure. And just like we talked about before, since we have not, you know, been exposed to this before, so there were some viruses that were, like, for example, transmitted sexually, like HIV viruses and stuff like
that.
But we are not sure, we are not 100% clear about this. So there is a bit of, you know, fear factor for intimacy also. But more than that, I think that some of the basic guidelines, if we just understand why they are being said, for example, there are different levels of exposure. So let's say if somebody is going to work in a hospital, in an ICU or emergency room where you are exposed to COVID positive, non-COVID positive or COVID exposed patients where we are screening them, as compared to if somebody is just going out and then they are in their own clinic, as compared to people who are, you know, out in the urgent cares. So basically, the same guidelines come into play, which is when you come home, a lot of people, what they are doing is, whether it's scientifically background or not, is what they do is they take their shoes off in the garage and they have a separate pair of slippers to come into the house. They also are trying to change clothes without, you know, touching things. They go straight to a shower. This is what my infectious disease friends have told me. They take a shower. They even wash their hair. Soap and water is actually exceptionally good for cleaning, and then they they wash their clothes. So as far as social distancing in the household is concerned, again, a lot of people are recommending that, you know, let's say it's a large family and each family member goes out to some level or not, then again you're exposed even by from just being outside.
Yeah.
So again, people are saying that you need to be not maybe just on top of each other for that. Right. Some of the people have, like, people in healthcare, they husbands and wives, they have separated their bedrooms. There are some
that's exactly what I was going to ask you. That a lot of problems are occurring, especially depression in wives or the husbands or even the, you know, children, because everybody is now in their in different rooms and they're kind of a little bit scared of each other. The fear factor is there. So do you think it's needed that everybody should be in different rooms?
So this is United States, and, you know, sometimes if you really look at it, husband and wives are usually in the same room. Otherwise, children are usually, each kid gets their own room anyway. So again, like, if we are having dinner, the more important thing is not to share utensils. Rather than just say, okay, if I'm eating in this room, then the other person eats in the other room. So you think that hand hygiene and using the hygiene is important. Again, to be in the intimacy part, it's because it is spread by the droplets and by contact with the mouth, and the kissing and stuff is what they are saying, that that is a higher risk. But other than that, I think it depends upon, there's no known recommendations or prohibitions at this time for intimacy. But what I tell people at this time is, you need to see where you are after you have taken the basic precaution. So for example, if you are so nervous and so worried that, you know, that intimacy is going to end up being more stressful, then there are other ways where you can counsel each other, console each other, be affectionate to each other. And that's where times like these bring opportunities of growth also. You know, how you grow in a relationship, you know, how you, you know, so it's, that's where it, it comes into play, in my opinion. What I'm recommending people is, use the basic hand hygiene, use the basic, if you have been exposed, then, and then there comes the point of like isolating, right? If you are in self-isolation, which is different, which is that you've been exposed, and then yes, you should be in a room. Then you should be sanitizing your hands. Then you should be cleaning and wiping down all surfaces, which is standard. But if you are in isolation or self-quarantine, then yes, then you shouldn't be using the kitchen, and then you should separate your room, separate your bathroom. And then somebody should just bring your food, leave it outside the door, and then you can, you know, pick it up and you can eat it. But there are caregivers that are wearing the good mask and gown and even gloves, and they're feeding, taking the food to the people who are sicker. So I think for general conversation and discussion, I think this is a basic idea of, if you are in self-quarantine because you may have been exposed or you have symptoms, then follow the CDC guidelines.
Definitely follow this, because this, you know, this is very important to protect yourself and protect others in the house as well. I'll just come to now, you know, I'm going to jump quickly to the spiritual aspect and bring some psychological aspect also. But I want to really focus now on the most problematic thing that is occurring. It's the fear factor, the fear of unknown. And I know, Usma, that in your private practice, you deal with this factor probably on daily basis, with where there is life and death matter, and you're an oncologist and there are cancer patients and you're giving chemo to them. And, you know, obviously the outcomes, nobody can be 100% sure of anything. So, but I see that this fear factor is very much prevalent and very much actually on the rise currently due to COVID-19 pandemic. That is because people don't know. It's there are a lot of unknowns about this, and there is obviously, you know, their health factor. There is the economic factor. So how to deal with this fear of unknown, specifically with the COVID-19 pandemic, from the spiritual, or you can say the psychological aspect?
So, you know, that's a very important aspect of this, and I think a lot of times that's one of the things we are grappling with as a society in America and globally, is how to name the feeling, the sinking feeling that we are all having. What is it? Is it uncertainty? Is it fear? Is it grief for losing what we once knew as normal? You know, so it could be all of the above. So, you know, today, or today's Sunday, and of course I don't have my clinic, but today I had five phone calls from patients or family and friends who are undergoing chemotherapy or diagnosed with cancer and are in the course of their treatment. And the question is the same.
Yeah.
They're all asking, how do they manage the risk of COVID-19 exposure and pandemic risks while having this cancer, where they are being told that the treatment for cancer also is essential? So that brings us to the crux of this dilemma. So the way I've been trying to explain to them, and understanding that humility that, you know, the person going through it is in the middle of it.
Right.
So what I'm trying to have them do, this exercise, which is, if they were to remove the fear and then come to this discussion. So if you remove the fear and you say there is a possibility of having an exposure to one you know, like a virus, but you have, but you already have a current problem you're going through, which is cancer. So if you were to remove the fear, if you assume that the outcomes will be good or will be all right, what would you do? And if they remove this fear and bring a little bit of objectivity, they are all coming to a very clear decision, and then they are keeping that decision. And then that's why they will. So, for example, you know, removing this fear and empowering yourself with knowledge and with what actually we can do in each situation is helping people get to the right answer. Because if somebody has cancer or a disease which requires essential treatments, for example, dialysis for renal failure, and that does predispose them to getting, you know, getting more complications. But so one is a chance, one is a reality. Like, you already are undergoing a cancer and cancer treatment. So you have to sit down with each person. And I mean, I'm glad that you brought spirituality aspect into it, because usually when, you know, we are having a great day and, you know, we have won a lottery or stuff, that's not the time that you really go deep into spirituality. It's for those times when we are really lost.
Exactly.
It's the time when we are in a pit and we don't know how to walk ourselves out of it. That's the time that you sometimes need, or often need something to hang on to. And that's the time when you look at spirituality or your faith, you know, tradition or your own inner strength tools, the tools that you were talking about, the coping, you know, skills, you know, you and I have mentioned several times before also. That's when that comes into this play.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly, there are certain tools which people can immediately use, but you can go deeper also and just do the, I think we have a lot of time now to do the self-reflection, and fear is bringing out a lot of our insecurities to the surface. And there is a very specific therapy called the logotherapy, one of my favorite. He was a psychotherapist, he was a psychiatrist, not a psychotherapist, who was in concentration camp, Viktor Frankl. I'm sure you must be knowing, must know about him, that the man, his book is Man in Search of Meaning. So he talks about finding meaning in suffering, and, you know, the suffering or the pain comes for a reason. So that's a more deeper, more intellectual way of going into it, and how he found meaning when he was in concentration camp. And his parents and I think his wife and mother, father, brother were killed in front of him. He survived. So, you know, these are the things which are the tools over there to go deeper spiritually. But yes, I'll be talking about certain things which people can do at home to immediately cope with anxiety attack or panic attack or any overwhelming situation. But again, I would recommend that in case they feel too overwhelmed, they need to seek professional help. And there is teletherapy available. You guys, physicians are doing the telemedicine. So it's not that the help is not available due to social distancing. Help is there. So I'll move on to the other factor, which is, again, on the rise, is the anxiety and depression because of isolation. So do you think that social distancing is making people isolated, or are these are two different things?
So I think what was happening even before this was the relationships were getting broader. I mean, we had more relationships through Facebook friends, through other, but the depth of those relationships was shrinking, if you would. Like, you know, like those like soulmates and those conversations were getting fewer and fewer because we didn't have time. So in a way, this social distancing is being almost like taken as a social isolation. In some places, it is being felt as a social isolation. Partly because we may have been isolated anyway to be like even before this happened, and now all of a sudden, you know, when we are all sitting in a room together, you know, what do we do? So the isolation, you know, in my opinion, this is a great time for using technology to overcome this feeling of being isolated. For example, my brother also lives here in Houston, so if we can't meet each other, I can pick up a phone and I can talk to him. It's not the same meeting with him, But if I really miss him, I can actually FaceTime him, right? Or we could be on Skype and so I think part of that use of this technology that we anyway are so dependent on can be, unfortunately, this is what we are, the other day in my clinic, it was the first time in my life I had to call a patient of mine and tell him on phone conversation that he has stage 4 cancer. I also struggled with it because I usually hold hands, I give hug, you know, I let them sit there for a little bit. So, but I explained to him that, you know, this is not something that I am also used to. So please, after 10, 15, 20 minutes of letting it sink in, if you have questions, please give me a call back. Yeah. So being available for each other and using this technology, I think it's going to be very, very, very important.
I mean, yeah, the technology is very important, but I feel handicapped there also because, you know, the kind of emotional stuff that I deal with when my clients come in and the physical presence of, you know, somebody in the room is very different. It's like I'm missing out on a big thing when I'm doing these teletherapies because it's just that I can see the person, but there is a vibe of comfort and you can say a support or something when you're physically there. They can see your expressions reciprocation and all of that. So that part is kind of missing in my therapy sessions as well, but we are trying to do the best we can. Plus, I think that social distancing, in my opinion, is not at all isolation. So isolation is what, you know, in the prisoners go through when they are put in isolation cells, and this is not what is happening to us. Like you said, that we have our phones and the, you know, the connecting tools that we have, the FaceTime, the Zoom groups and all of that, so we can just pick up the phone and talk to whoever we want to talk to, friends and family members. So staying connected is the thing. It's a new thing. I mean, it can't replace the physical presence of the person, like you said, but still, it's a tool that we can still be able to talk to each other. We can see if our parents are not living with us. Let's say we need to call them. We can FaceTime them and see exactly what they're doing, where their medication is. Do they have food in the fridge and all of that? So we can cover all of these things still with the help of this, you know, the tools that we have.
And I just want to bring another point into this. No matter how new this situation is for us and how much helpless we may feel coping with it, we still have a choice of how we want to remain connected and how much we want to remain connected. While observing social distancing, you know, and while observing the CDC you know, guidelines, and again, isolation can be present in between two people living in the same house. And we are seeing more and more this so emotional abandonment and not for this discussion, but, you know, domestic violence increasing because people are irritated. And that's why it's very important for people to know, like, even those tools exist where we can help people. Yes, it's something very, very different for us.
Yes.
But fortunately, you know, I want to bring this, like, I don't know if you were able to see that or not. Queen Britain, England, she had a very short.
Yeah, I missed it. I didn't see it. I couldn't. So you want to tell me about it? What happened there?
Yeah, I'll tell you something very important about that, because what she did was, she is in 2 weeks going to be 94. She looked fat for 94. So she showed pictures of herself and her sister during the World War, when they were teenagers.
Okay.
And she said, in her own words, she said, we survived through many, many, many things before this, and we will survive through this, and things will be better, and we will move on. I think that's an important, very important point, that using imagination, anecdote, your life experiences, almost everyone, some more than the other, have experienced some challenge in their life.
Definitely.
And because each challenge allows you to survive and grow. Sometimes these times allow us to sit and reflect and dig deep and pull out those tools and those, you know, strengths that we had learned through that course. And bring it to, and I see this in my cancer patients all the time, where when they are given this devastating diagnosis and they're going through this grueling treatments, all of them are actually relying on their its deeper strengths and inner strengths and maybe previous challenges. Like, I'll give you a quick example of one of my patients who, when I explained to her that she came alone. Usually people don't come alone when I'm telling them they have cancer. So when she came, I explained to her that this is the cancer, chemotherapy and surgery and radiation and all that. And I then asked her, like, you know, is there a reason why she's there by herself? So she did say that, you know, she was a single mom and she had two sons, one 19, one 25, and both had died in the course of the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, for me, I was at loss of words, you know,
right.
And I wanted to let her carry the con. And then she told me how she's looking at that loss and she's pulling her strength out of that loss and say, I went through this and I'm going through this now. There is a purpose that I'm here for. I'm going to find my purpose and I'm going to continue doing that.
You know what? This is one of the main coping skills that I was going to talk about, and I'm glad that you gave examples. Now it will be very clear to the audience that tapping your past traumatic experiences and how you survived them, so you can, like you said, you can bring the strength from there, the coping mechanisms from there, and now apply them in this current situation so that you can go through it and you can so basically that is a very, very important aspect. One more thing, Uzma, I want to just go back to, because you talked about the purpose and also choosing something from the past and bringing it here. And you haven't even talked about how you can take the fear factor out and, you know, just try to assess the situation without the fear factor, become objective. All these things that you mentioned, Viktor Frankl had talked about. That's why it's very close to my heart, that therapy, because it is one of the very effective therapies that are available now. So I'll just briefly talk about it, that he says that there is a stimulus and then there is a reaction. In between the time that you have a control over it because you have a free will to choose. And this is what exactly you and I are talking about, that yes, there is a stimulus and there is an outcome, but in between we have a free will that we can choose our action, our reaction accordingly, objectively, with a purpose, so that our action at the end should reflect that rather than the fear factor or the anxiety or the depression or all of that. So we can actually avoid all that if we go through that route. So I just wanted to bring in that.
I think that's a very important thing that you bring, because sometimes what happens is when we go through life and we do things, we don't know that these are real studied psychological, psychotherapeutic actions. But once, like, I'm sure a lot of listeners who hear you say that these are coping skills actually bring, I think it's important to talk about that, because then you just don't leave that, you may go back there, you may dare go back in that challenging time and say, how did I really survive it? And what were the things I used to get out of that?
So, I'm sorry, you go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to start with the, you know, the coping skills. We can go over them, but you had something to say. You can just finish it and then I'll move on.
Right. So let me just bring this, and I'm sure you're going to talk about this in your coping mechanism. Again, it's a... There is a system that I use, a program that I use in my practice, and I've actually been practicing it on my, like, in my practice. I call it restorative healing, and basically it's a process. So healing is different than treatment and cure. You can cure a person,
yes,
but they may not be healed.
They're different,
right? So for me, the most important thing for somebody to heal is for them to declare that I want to heal. And I consider myself healed. The second thing is imagination. How do you imagine that path forward be? You have to imagine a life without cancer. You have to be able to imagine a life without chemotherapy, without radiation therapy, especially in people who go through breast removals and disfiguring surgeries. They need to start imagining themselves as a whole and a complete. I also want to bring this concept and which is hope and honesty. We can look at it COVID-19 conversation that we see time and again. There is a lot of honest information. 300,000 people have been exposed.
Yes.
9,000 people have died. It's honest. This is honest data. That's not what you need for healing alone. You need hope. You need, you know, things are going to be all right. And that's where the faith comes in. And that's where, you know, some of those, especially people with concentration camps or in solitary confinement, they use that power. And I'm just going to bring it up quick. And then is choosing the people around you.
Yeah, very, very important.
Like if you are around people who are just calling you, did you see that another person died? Did you see 1,000 people get diagnosed? That is just like
brings
like
you
fuel
down
for the fire. So
that's true.
I would love to hear what you, what skills you want to share. And
So the skills that I want to share, these are the very, very preliminary ones. And this is something you can say like a first aid kind of a thing people can do at home. These are the preventive measures you can say. So the first I would say is that the first one would be to pay attention to self-care, which is very important. You know, now that we are all at home, everybody is doing double what they were doing previously, because now families are together and there are more people in the house and there's work to do, and then there are people working from home as well. So they might not find time to properly have their meals or exercise, or maybe because of stress they don't sleep well. So they need to pay a special attention to all of these factors. And they should have a proper sleep, take time out for exercise, yoga, meditation, even if you have some personal hobbies, because now there is a lot of time at hand. So people can start something which they like, painting, gardening, something that they can do at home, or reading, or, you know, catching up with the Netflix programs, shows, whatever they like. So the first would be the self-care. And the second, I would say that limit your access to the news, because it's kind of perpetuates more and more anxiety in you. You are seeing the same news over and over. Yes, the data is already there and you can see it and it's changing so fast, but you can just limit your access to the news. And the other one, Uzma, the third one is the most important one that you were mentioning. You gave examples that, you know, from your past stressful times or traumatic experiences, try to reflect back and see your success in that. What did you do that made you successful or got you through that traumatic time? So use that strategy now, because you will need it now in these times. The other would be to avoid the isolation, stay connected. And you can just, like we talked about it, use Zoom chats or Zoom and FaceTime, talk to friends, talk and try and sit down and have quality time with your family members that you missed out on. I mean, you might not be at very, very good terms with each other in that aspect that you haven't opened up in the longest time, because you were out there working, fast-paced life, no time, come home, just have your meal, sleep. But now you have time. So do these date nights, you can say, with the family in the living area. Designate a place in the home and do the game night or watch a movie together or discuss something. And also, I would say that we are all very conscious about the negative thought process. If it starts, try to distract yourself by doing something that you really like to do. Even you can do cooking if you like, or you can start cleaning, or you know, you can start watching a movie or some, just occupy yourself so that you break that vicious negative thought process. And obviously, lastly, I would say that seek professional help if you feel that you can't cope with the overwhelming situation you are in. So these are the at-home to-do things that you can do.
I think this is extremely important, especially for, I guess, the people who reach out to you. It is a great resource for them to have. So yes, they are starting to feel again. I'm sure you will tell people what you know. I tell my patients is like, don't wait when your symptoms are really at its peak to call for help.
Call that's early. True.
If it is a false alarm or you just needed a little bit of intervention, I rather do that than wait for a full blown, you know, depression or suicidal ideation and things
right.
like that. So So I think it's important for people to also know that just because of your stay at home and work safe orders don't mean that you can't access your therapist. You can call the therapist. But what I would like to, and I'll take your advice on that. What I would like to do for people who are not in dire emergent depressive or anxious anxiety crisis or panic crisis is to do a bit of a self-work before they start the conversation with the therapist also. Of course, they should call as soon as they think they should call. But this is the time when you're not in that, in the apex of that panic mode or the anxiety mode or the depression mode, to actually sit down and see what is it that is really bothering us. Is that really COVID-19 pandemic, or is it just unleashing some other inherent anxieties or insecurities or problems that we are having? And it may be an opportunity for us to actually grow in this moment. And for example, sometimes when I feel very much like a little burdened or heaviness on me, mm-hmm. usually what I have done is go out, buy coffee, go out, buy something, go out thing, rather than offload things or downsize emotionally or downsize physically, rather than keep accumulating more on our soul and our body and our emotions. Can you talk about that, please? Our body.
Yeah, that's a very good advice. But in my profession, I have seen that people just wait until the very last minute. There are very few people who are that tuned into their feelings that they would say that, okay, or maybe if something has happened to them before, they would just say, okay, now we are getting there where we need actually help. Otherwise, it will get worse. I have seen that people come when it's actually already they're on the edge. So, and they... maybe they don't know the few strategies or they didn't work for them, which is fine. I mean, that can happen to people. As long as you seek help, that is fine. But that's why I just wanted to give few guidelines that you can do that at home. You know, take care of yourself so that you don't get in the panic mode and then reach out to your therapist. I think that will be very, very helpful.
The tools you gave, which I find them very, very helpful, and I'll practice quite a few of them myself, is mm-hmm. that we don't need to wait for anxiety attack to come to start practicing this. This should be a preventive mode also.
This is a prevent, definitely this is a prevent, because we are all actually now not only exposed to COVID-19 pandemic coronavirus, but we are exposed to mental health problems also, because we are all human and we all can just lose it at some time. So I think that, you know, if people, there is a very good app, I just remembered Headspace, and you can use it. You don't have to go to a therapist for mindfulness exercise or relaxation exercises. There are very good apps, and one of this is a very good one, the Headspace, and people have used it and they can use it to relax themselves. And then try to find more activities that relax you. Try to find time in your day for yourself. You know, the me time is the all the more needed now than it was needed before. So although we are not running around, but we are bombarded by things that we have to do at home, and obviously there are, you know, people working from home as well. So try to do this and not wait until the very end and come to a therapist. That's for sure.
Time is the resource, right? So we have mm-hmm. you know, different kinds of energies. We have the physical energy, we have the emotional energy. Sometimes we do the mundane things when we have the most physical energy. And like, for example, dishes and laundry and this and that. And yeah. you do all of that. And by that time, we are physically mm-hmm. exhausted and mm-hmm. emotionally beat. So I think right. people should have an idea of their yeah. own. Again, a good time for us to map this out. We may not have ever done this exercise before. But what is the time when I have most emotional energy? What is my high time? What is my prime time? Where am I at the best of my game? Mm-hmm. And actually, believe it or not, you tell me what you think about this. Right now, use that mm-hmm. on self-care. You know, this is the time to invest.
Definitely. In yourself. Yeah. And, you know, exactly. So, and you should know when it is time for you to just step back. and take a moment. Because, you know, we keep on doing our best. We try to do whatever is in our capacity and beyond that. And we try to tap those times when we are high on energy and we try to do our maximum at that time. But you know, remember, we were having a conversation and you told me that Farah, just take it easy and, you know, just don't, you know, take, give yourself some time, because I was telling you that I'm so bombarded by these clients and I'm hearing the same thing over and over again that I feel it's now affecting me. I'm a very positive person, but I have started to see the anxious part of it, or the, you know, the depressive part of it. So I was being sucked into it. So immediately I took that moment and I said, you know what, I'll just, you know, postpone few of my unnecessary, nothing is unnecessary, but those clients who don't need it that immediately, the counseling, and I'll just take a step back and only see those who are in urgent need. So that gave me some space and room to again rejuvenate, refresh myself. We all need it. We are doing emotional, physical, you know, all sorts of stuff, psychological stuff. It's burning us out. So we all have to take a moment and refresh ourselves. So we should be the best judge of it and should look for it, that if we are not giving our 100% at a certain time, or not even 50% or whatever, you can say. So we need to step back a little bit, give ourselves some time.
Actually, I call it healing the healers. You know, just because somebody is a healer doesn't mean they are not in help, in need of help, and that just authenticates what you and I are talking about. You know, this is not just dry advice. This isn't reading off of some notes. This is something you are practicing and I'm practicing. You know, there are times when I feel emotionally exhausted, like I don't know how the business is going to be affected. I don't know how the health insurance is going to be. I don't know if my patients are going to even have health care or not. I don't know, my son, who is a resident in medical school, who's admitting and treating COVID, you know, patients. I don't know whether he's going to get exposed or not. There are so many I don't knows, that's not where I'm going to gain my strength from.
Right.
I'm going to gain my strength from what I do know. I do know that I am in an essential job. I need to be out there for people, but there will be times when I will be in a little bit of what we call a quarantine. I would call it an emotional quarantine, so to speak, where you rejuvenate yourself. You just offload some of the, or you nourish and cherish your own self. And then you go out again with the same zeal and with the same, you know, desire to make a difference in other people's lives. So it's very important for mothers and the fathers and the teachers and the healers to understand they need to heal too.
Definitely. And I love this idea of emotional quarantine, because I think this is what we will be needing down the road. This COVID-19 is going to take some time. It seems like it's there for a while, and we need to take care of ourselves so that we are physically, mentally, and emotionally present for our loved ones, for our, you know, people that professionally we deal with. So I think here I'll just wrap up this whole our discussion, which is ending at a very positive note, that yes, we have to give our best right now and tap our potentials that we thought we didn't had before. Now they are coming out, and we need to do our best in this situation, stay positive, and do not dwell on the negativity and the unknown factor of that, so that don't let fear rule you. So we can be objective, like you said, in our interactions with people and in our endeavor to help them, to elevate them. That should be the goal. There should be a purpose in all of this that we are trying to do, and that is to bring everybody, lift everyone up, and keep the spirits up. And I would like to thank you very much, Usma, for giving your time. I know you are very busy. You know, people are so busy working and, you know, giving time to their patients and families over the weekend, especially on Sunday. I had to just grab you and say, Usma, you have to do this with me. So thanks a lot. And it's always appreciated.
Thank you so much.
To the matter.
Very grateful for this opportunity. I'm also talking to a lot of medical students and, residents, because I want to keep this hope going.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, we can make the rest of our life the best of our lives.
Yes.
I mean, it's not lost. So thank you so much, Farah.
Inshallah. Thank you, Usma. Thank you.